Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends, and welcome to the World Transform. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I am. I'm happy we made it to Friday.
Yeah, we've made it. We've made it through another week, and I got to tell you, I was pretty psyched after the Wednesday show. To come up with some dumb ideas and start implementing them, you know. Once you know that, you know what my big takeaway from the Wednesday show is? I meant to say this then. Is my takeaway is that if any random list of dumb ideas, one out of the 10 is worth $200 million. If you haven't heard the show, go back and listen to the archive. I'm pretty sure that's what.
So here's what we need to do. We need to try 10 stupid things or dumb things. And,
yep.
And you know, You might lose some money. You lose your shirt on 9 of them, but all you need is one $200 million success, and you can pay off all those failures and probably still be rolling in it, right?
And you're set. So. Exactly. So that's the real value of dumb ideas. But it all has to do with the fact that embedded within good ideas and bad ideas is possibility. We looked at one business that made $200 million, and they did it by taking a dumb idea and working it. They worked it in interesting directions, and they had timing on their side, but they turned it into something very valuable. And I think it's because they were realizing the possibility. They had identified and were going to realize the possibility. And so tonight we're going to talk about the future and unlimited possibility, and we're going to talk about the possible from a couple of different perspectives. One we've talked about before, and that's the adjacent possible. But we're going to list a couple of other variations on the possible as well, because I think the adjacent doesn't necessarily cover all the different kinds. But we'll get into that and see if this classification system that I've come up with has legs, or if the adjacent possible on its own does it. But let's go back to that. Let's start with that one, the adjacent possible. We've talked about this a few times on the show over the last few years, but how about a quick recap, Stephen? I know you're fond of this idea. What is the adjacent possible?
Author Stephen Johnson coined the term, I believe. It's this idea that once you reach a certain level of development, there, you know, every time you're at a particular, you know, level, there are going to be new things that are now possible that weren't possible before. It's the idea of we're always standing on the shoulders of giants, right? That's
right.
Those who have gone before us have made new things possible for us today. And so that's the idea of adjacent possible. And, you know, it's quite possible for us to miss some possibilities. I'm saying possible a lot. It's quite, you know, you can bypass certain possibilities and reach out and try things sometimes before it's time, like we talked about in our Wednesday show. But just because you missed an idea, you know, it doesn't mean it couldn't come up again in a different way. The adjacent possible, you can imagine a conference center, Bill, that's divided, that has dividers set up so that it's all, like you have a grid of rooms, okay? Let's imagine a 64 by 64 grid. It's a chessboard. And all the rooms are connected to each other by four doors, okay? If I'm at the very beginning of this grid, I have some possibilities in front of me, but the rooms on the far side of the conference center are not available to me because that's not adjacent. But I have these rooms right next to me, so I open those doors and I go in it, which creates new possibilities, and it kind of unfolds exponentially, doesn't it?
Yeah, you're adjacent to three more rooms that you weren't before. And if you think of those in terms of scenarios, if you think of them in terms of possibilities that could be realized, you just got to keep moving through those rooms, right?
I could even miss a room, and then somebody opens the door behind us, you know, and says, "Oh, look at this! This is a room we didn't have before, and we could have accessed this before. We just missed this."
Yeah, because if you make a left turn out of one room, there's still a meandering path back to the one that was on the right,
right,
including just walking right back through it. But you can explore other possibilities that will lead you back to the one that you started with. I love his description of the adjacent possible. He says kind of a shadow future hovering on the edges of the present state of things, a map of all the ways in which the present can reinvent itself. And I thought just for clarification purposes, we could whip out a few adjacent possibilities. Okay, so these are like one room over. These are my best attempt at defining things that are in the next room, or within a reasonable number of steps from where we are. And I'm just listing a couple of things here that we've been talking about on the show. Anyway, the robot lawyer. We've got this story from the Wall Street Journal. I don't know if you saw this, but I mean, we've talked about lawyers being replaced by robots, and I don't know if you saw this, but it's really happening in London. Okay, a chatbot lawyer overturns 160,000 parking tickets in London and New York. This is pretty close to a robot lawyer. It's not exactly what it is. I mean, they've got this elaborate site set up where you can protest your parking ticket. But the way they collect the information is this chatbot asks you questions about what happened, how did you get the parking ticket, and it looks for weaknesses in the case, and then it submits. They help you submit your case, and they've done a pretty impressive job. So this is like, if you look at the idea of you just go online and find a fully automated lawyer who solves a legal problem for you, we're not quite there, right? That's one room away. But this is, I think, proof that we're one room away from that, or this is evidence that we might be one room away from that.
Well, the legal profession as a whole has not been one to embrace technology as fast as some other professions, but we're there now. And those who are trying to do it the old-fashioned ways are being lapped by those who are embracing technology now, and so I've seen that in the course of my now 20-year career, Phil. I mean, some of the old timers were still just banging away on typewriters when I started in the late 90s, and we kind of laughed at that. But now, I mean, you know, so far beyond just word processors, that it's a very different profession than what it was when I entered it. Really is. I see this happening. I see things like this happening. Now, this is sort of competition to the profession, not unlike LegalZoom. Where it allows people that are not lawyers to do things for themselves that used to require a lawyer. And so this is sort of competition to the profession, which will be resisted by the profession as much as they can, but to some extent is a losing battle. I agree. This stuff will get more sophisticated over time.
Yeah, I think the fully automated legal experience is one step away. And perhaps we enter that room, perhaps the bar associations prevent that from happening right away, and we end up, as we were talking about before, taking a digression around before we end up in that room. But we're one step away from that. And I listed under that, see also the conversational user interface, another topic we've talked about many times. We've been talking about this for years, that we're closing in on, the ability just to interact with the computer using not just giving voice commands, but actually having a conversation with the computer and talking to it as you would a human and getting done the kinds of work that you get done right now using a mouse and a keyboard and all that kind of stuff.
The picture they have for that article is Picard. The picture I would have put would probably have been Tony Stark. What we want is Jarvis, right? I mean, a AI that is – fully invested in what we are trying to do and to help us do what we're trying to do. So
exactly. That's the future personal assistant that we're looking for. I think maybe even ahead of that, there's convergence on these kind of call center apps where you're getting closer and closer to having a conversation there. So it might not be your personalized, optimized conversational user interface where you first encounter kind of the true CUI. But that's where it's got to go, ultimately. If it's really going to be conversational, it needs to be, you're right, it's like the next generation of Siri or the generation immediately after that, where you're talking to this entity exactly the same way that Tony Stark talks to Jarvis and interact at that same kind of personal, intimate level with them. And where we are now, I don't know when – I don't have a time factor associated with the step, but the technology is right there, right? We are so close to this.
We're on the doorstep of that one, Phil. I feel like in the next 5 years, let me just go out on a limb here. We started as the speculist. Let's speculate for just a second. I would say within 5 years, most of our computer interaction will be by way of voice. I think we'll be doing that more than interacting by way of touchscreens and mice and keyboards. I think we'll still have those things, but we'll be doing more voice than that.
Well, I know that I dictate now almost as often as I actually keyboard things.
You're a two finger typist. I'm a 10 finger typist, and I'm pretty fast. So I probably will hang on to the keyboard longer. See, that's the legacy problem, isn't it? If you're really good at the old way of doing things, sometimes that is a barrier to adapting the new thing.
I'm very fast with two fingers, though. I want to just point out.
That's true. I've always been amazed at how fast you can.
You've got your typical 10-finger snobby attitude toward those two-finger typists, but some of us can.
Yeah, I'm amazed because I can see you typing in real time when we share a document, and how quickly you can do it with two fingers is pretty amazing, but yes, you're a two finger typist, and it doesn't surprise me you're picking up the voice faster. I'm paying you a backhanded compliment, Phil.
No, it's absolutely it's true. As a 10 finger typist, you were more fully integrated into that system than I ever was, anyway.
Right.
And the thing I like about it is although it's been said that you can't write, that writing is different than talking. You can begin writing through a different interface than your hands. You can line your brain up with that. I think that our brains are plastic enough to get to the point where we can do it, and it's very freeing. Because I do a lot of it on my phone, right? And I can just do it anywhere. You whip out you start a new note, and you just start writing, right? Wherever you happen to be. I mean, sometimes you look like you're crazy because you're talking. Saying this long thing into your phone, but
we as a society have become accustomed to people talking to machines. We have already crossed that bridge. So it's you look less crazy talking to yourself now than we used to.
Yeah, but if you're standing in the aisle of the supermarket and you're just kind of going on and on into your phone, I'm still self-conscious. I'm from a previous generation. I'm still self-conscious about it, I guess, but. Anyway, here's another one. Going to Mars, are we really one step away from going to Mars? Well, we talked about this, 2 weeks ago. Elon Musk says we are, right? He says
He wants to do it within a decade. China has also announced a plan to get it done within a decade. So we got a new space race, perhaps, between Elon Musk and China.
Bring it.
Yeah, we love it. Nothing makes things happen more than a race. You know, I mean
right. –
You remember the DNA decoding business, which President Clinton declared a tie, I think, kind of save face, because it looked like, I think, Venter was going to beat the government program. It was declared a tie, the Human Genome Project and Venter's project. But, a race gets things done. It really does. And so, bring it. Yeah,
bring it. Anyway, those are examples, and the point is there are millions, billions, I don't know, there are myriad of these possibilities that we're just right on the brink of. And to go back to the model, as you introduced it, I think that's really helpful to think of those doors. Yes, there are millions, billions of these possibilities. They won't all be realized, even though they're only one step away. Some will be. Some will go through a very long, arduous path to get to them, and some just won't happen. Now, I look at going to Mars
adjacent,
and the conversational user interface. These are near inevitabilities, but a lot of the things that are adjacent that are just one step away won't happen.
Right. Well, and sometimes it doesn't happen because we will leapfrog it, and it just doesn't happen. There's a patent that was made on an automatic Flintstone lighter to light your cigarette with, and that and it worked pretty well, but it came out within 6 months of the the Zippo lighters, okay, that rolled out in the 1920s, and so. It was bypassed. We had better technology happen at the same time. Now, had that had the Flint lighter come out 10 years earlier, it would have enjoyed at least 10 years, right? Because it would have been the best product at the time. But it came out within months of the Zippo, which was so much better. So, sometimes we just we do something better. So much faster that we end up some technologies we never end up having.
They get left behind.
You know,
there
is something that requires a little humility with among inventors to accept the idea of the adjacent possible. There's a certain inevitability sometimes that the adjacent possible kind of points out this concept of the adjacent possible. And I sometimes put it this way: had the Wright brothers devoted their lives instead of to an airplane, had devoted their lives to building the best motorcycles in the world, then we could ride Wright Brother Wright motorcycles to the airport today.
Right, because the airport
was
still...
The airplane was going to happen. Now, it may not have happened in 1903, as it did with the Wright brothers. It might have been 1910, okay? But it was going to happen, and I would say no later than 1910. Somebody was going to do it, and probably within... a few years of 1903, they just happened to get to it first. We were pretty sure they got to it first. There's actually some candidates for having done it before the Wright brothers, but we accept that they were the first, and it was done in 1903. It was the adjacent possible at that moment. Somebody was going to do it.
I'll give you another example. If early on Edison and Tesla had gotten in a big fight and killed each other, right? AC power in our homes. We'd still have light bulbs.
We could turn on our televisions and watch a documentary about how terrible that was.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Or actually this obscure thing of these two people you've hardly ever even heard of, right?
That's right. Because they got in a duel
because
Edison ripped off Tesla, and which actually happened.
Yeah.
But
the point is it could have been different people because that technology was just on the horizon. But sometimes it's not just on the horizon, but we can see it coming. Okay, and that's the second category that I'm listing here. I'm calling it the distant possible. We can imagine them, but they are not in the next room. And they're maybe not in the next room after that, but they're somewhere down the line. And I've listed some obvious ones like, time travel. It's a possibility. It's disputed as to whether it is or not. Okay, so its possibility status is in question. Interstellar travel, same thing. Digital immortality, the same thing. But assuming that these are possible, we don't have the clear path to them, right? We know that they're we know they're out there, but we're not going to get to them in the next room. And that, to me, that raises a really intriguing question of where do we put some of the possibilities that are maybe a little nearer term, but aren't quite adjacent. And, I've added to that list, I've added life extension. By that, I mean actual indefinite health span. I should probably put it in those
clarify,
terms.
Yeah.
Or, an all-out cure for cancer or a totally jobless economy, right? Are those in the next room or are those a few rooms down? I think there are a few, at least a couple of rooms down. Could be wrong.
I'm a little more optimistic, Bill. I think that... these things that are really tough nuts to crack. I mean, Nixon declared war on cancer with the idea that with sufficient dollars, we could have that problem pretty much licked in the early 70s, right? And this idea of indefinite health span, the problems to solve to get to indefinite health span are so huge. And you know, there's questions and some very you know very knowledgeable people have some questions as to whether we can ever get to it. But I'm a little more optimistic. I think cure for cancer, while it's, you know, we're dealing with the fact that it's not one disease, it's many diseases, and it's not one, so it's not one problem, it's many problems. I think we're getting the toolbox together to actually, you know, really hit cancer hard for the first time, and I think that's going to happen within a decade.
Okay, so I would put cure for cancer into the adjacent possible.
I would, indefinite health span. I would think that, you know, as we're curing cancer, you know, we are basically laying the groundwork for the indefinite health span, too. That's one of the things we got to do, right? So I would say that while indefinite health span is not the adjacent like cure for cancer is, I would put it in the very next room after that.
I would say
cure for obesity might be easier, actually, than cancer. And so you talk about a great one for the developed world there, right? You know, heart disease,
absolutely,
things like that, diabetes. I think that all these problems can be solved in the adjacent possible.
Interesting. What about the jobless economy? Do you see that as distant or adjacent?
I'm afraid that it might be adjacent. And the jobless economy comes with all sorts of social upheaval, and I don't know that we're ready for it. So, you know, it's I'm actually hopeful that it's not adjacent, that we come to that slowly, if we come to it at all.
One of the things you have to note about the adjacent possible is there's no guarantee that it's going to be all that pleasant in a room that's one room away, right?
That's right. That's right.
There's all kinds of horrible possibilities that are adjacent and distant, and you know, all the different classifications we can make. I don't think that a jobless economy has to be horrible, but it you know, if it's just everybody's out of work, that's not great. You know, if it's
we all join that social network we mentioned on Wednesday. You know, that unemployed people.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the Great Depression was a big step towards the jobless economy, and I don't think people were too thrilled with that.
Nobody wants that, no.
Yeah, so. I like the way you're thinking that maybe these that I ask, where do we put them? Because I'm not 100% sure. That maybe these are primarily adjacent. And when you look at it, going to Mars is one that we could easily have listed as distant. But the reason it's adjacent is because we got somebody reasonably credible saying it's going to happen soon. And I think the closer we get to somebody credible saying, yep, we're going to have indefinite human lifespan in 20 years or 15 years or 10 years from now, whenever it is, you know, when someone puts that stake in the ground and we believe them, then we know it's adjacent, right? I'm not 100% sure on that one, but that's when we know. I take your point on cure for cancer. And, I feel that the jobless economy is almost one that helps introduce that next category, which I'm calling the hidden possibility. And here we're talking about possibilities. They can be close or they can be far away, but we haven't thought of them yet, right? And there's just all kinds of unknown unknowns associated with the end of employment and, you know, kind of the ushering in of the post-scarcity economy. So you end up in this place where there's just a lot of possible that we don't have the handle on that we want to have about the future yet. And I guess the hidden possible is probably, on the one hand, kind of the most wonderful of the three and the scariest of the three, isn't it?
It is. You know, things can sneak up on you. And you know, and people, even investors, you know, how do you invest in the future if you don't know? But then again, it's exciting because, you know, you can come across something that, you weren't even trying to do. I mean, let's, you know, it's sort of a funny example, Viagra, okay?
Okay.
What were they trying to do? They were trying to do something pretty, mundane. They were trying to increase circulation.
Right.
And they were trying to develop a drug that would improve circulation in people that had that problem. Well, lo and behold, in testing it on male subjects, it has this
interesting
particular
side effect.
Yeah. Interesting side effect. And they scratch their heads and they go, I think we can probably do something with this. And, of course, it was perhaps the biggest blockbuster drug of all time, because if there's anything that a middle-aged guy would like to take a drug for, you know, it turns out it's that. So, that's, you know, that's an example of something that's just out of the blue. You're not expecting it. You entered that adjacent room and, lo and behold, it's something you never realized you weren't even trying for. And it surprises you sometimes for the good.
Yeah,
and I would say usually for the good. Most possibilities are, you know, you usually can find something good about it.
Because the thing is, if you discover a terrible side effect for a drug,
you can just avoid
it.
You don't
use it. Yeah, I mean, it goes back to the human imperative. We're trying to make good things happen, and when we find a bad consequence, we work around it or abandon the idea or fix it somehow. But when we find a good consequence, we capitalize on it, right?
We say,
hey, we got a whole new line of how to get where we're going. And I think that's a great example. I think Viagra is a really good example of that. And, you know, one of the things I want to say about the hidden possible is, unlike the other two categories, I can't provide examples of the hidden possible.
Yeah, by definition, we can't tell you what we don't know that
right.
will happen next. And
right,
so,
but we see where it happens when we look back. Viagra is
right.
one example of that, right, where something where it just kind of startled us that something new was introduced. And one that occurred to me is when Amazon said they were looking into doing deliveries by drone, right? That was like, well, that was a possibility that was just sitting there, and somebody just had to recognize it, and, you know, maybe one day they'll realize it. I had a similar effect with Uber and Lyft when I first heard of them, Airbnb, that whole model of kind of, you know, using smartphones and a central database to take existing infrastructure. And
I saw a story this week on the FAA basically lifting some restrictions on drone traffic. I think that's interesting.
Yes. Yeah,
I would imagine that people like Amazon probably lobbied hard for things like that.
I'm guessing Amazon helped draft whatever got signed off on there, or their lobbyists did.
Right.
But you see how quickly something that was hidden. I mean, you know, when did Amazon come out with that idea? A couple years ago, we first heard of that. Something that we had never even thought about, and boom, it's adjacent, right? So they don't all have to be all that far off. Or something really bizarre, like, 4 or 5 years ago, we suddenly started hearing about our gut bacteria, right? Talk about hidden.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's down there in your intestines, and it has all these unexpected potentials for improving your health that we had never even thought about. So I think the hidden possible is fantastic. One of the reasons that we just got to keep exploring new ideas, going back to our show on Wednesday, even dumb ideas, is because there's possibilities hidden in almost everything we do and almost everything we try and everything that we think about. And with that, gosh, it looks like we're completely out of time. But
had fun, Phil. This was a great show.
It's fun to talk about this. And, folks, we will be back again next week to further explore the possibilities. Thank you for being with us, Stephen. Always great talking with you. And until next time, live to see it.